Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, your twice-monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike, and with me, as always, is First Mate Slagkick.
Yarr!
Today is January 21st, 2017, and this is GameBuoy Podcast episode 130, Flick of the Switch, Nintendo Switch Reveal in Review. Welcome once again, our lovely and beautiful listeners, to another episode of the GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
This week, we are going to talk about some of the news that has come about the Nintendo Switch after the Nintendo Switch reveal, as well as taking another look at the reveal now that we've had a week or two to think about it. So buckle in and get ready for that. But first, we have our usual slate of follow-ups and news bits. Slaggy, do you want to get us started?
Yes. Super Mario Run is going to be launching for Android on an unspecified date at the moment in March 2017. So those of you who, like myself, have been waiting to play the side-scrolling auto runner and
picks for game of the year.
Yes, and we're waiting for it to come to Android device. Then it will be just a couple short weeks now. Maybe
excellent.
Even on Switch Day. Who knows?
Oh, how funny would that be?
I kind of wonder why they didn't announce a Switch version, but yeah.
Because it's a mobile phone game.
But hey, why not both?
We also have word here of Guilty Gear Xrd Revelator 2, or Rev 2. This has been announced for arcade, PlayStation 4, PlayStation 3, and PC. The Japanese arcade release will be in spring of 2017. So far, we know that returning character Baiken will be a playable character, as well as newer character who I believe has previously appeared just in the lore and cutscenes of story mode, Answer, will be another playable character. It is unknown if we will have any additional playable characters, but this is definitely a game we will be keeping on our eyes on here at GameBuoy.
The latest King of Fighters is a mobile RPG. A mobile MMORPG, rather. This is the King of Fighters World. It'll be releasing first in China this summer.
On smartphone.
And we'll have a complete 3D engine.
Ooh, that's interesting. We also have an update here from Fangamer on the Mighty Number 9 backer rewards. Slaggy, I know that you had some strong feelings about this one. Do you want to kick us off on sort of what we're looking at here?
So basically, a fan reached out, or a backer, you know, reached out to Fangamer, who is handling the physical rewards. And basically the response was that they're still waiting on certain assets from concept to be able to actually produce these physical rewards.
Yeah, you know, we're getting to the point now where this is just shameful. I have defended Mighty Number 9 a lot. I still don't think it's a bad game. It's just, you know, it's unpolished, it's a bit messy. I was really looking forward to a second game, but stuff like this, where Comcept has just really dropped the ball, hasn't provided Fangamer literally with straight up even like art assets to put together, you know, some of the art books and stuff, like, that's crazy. I literally can't understand how anyone could defend Comcept at this point.
Certainly
can't.
Guess they're too busy working on Red Ash.
All right. Too bad no one wants it.
In happier news, there will be the ability to use Pokemon from XY, Alpha Sapphire, and Omega Ruby in the upcoming battle season in Pokemon Sun and Moon.
Oh, wow. That's wild. I was not anticipating that to be possible. That's really exciting. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's pretty cool considering that there are some that, you know, you cannot obtain in Sun and Moon. So if you have any faves that you're really wanting to raise, or, you know, rather bring over. I say raise because I would probably just, you know, level one from an egg. But, you know, I think that's it's good to open up, and especially, you know, now that the game's been out and people have been able to, you know, kind of strategize with the Pokemon that are just in the game, you know, kind of open it up, see some more diversity.
Awesome. We also have confirmation here that the most recent Final Fantasy Dissidia arcade character has been announced, and we are looking at Final Fantasy IX's Kuja.
Yes.
Of course, I'm really excited about this. I like Final Fantasy IX a fair bit, and I think Kuja is a pretty rad character, so I'm stoked. That having been said, I am ready for the reveal of some all-new characters, not characters that were in previous versions of Dissidia.
Right. In other news, GameStop and Amazon are all out of their initial allotment of Nintendo Switch systems.
Yeah, well, and you know, this goes hand in hand with some interesting news that I don't really have a link here for, but obviously, you know, today is the 21st. We're in North America, so...
So in Japan, it's the 22nd.
In Japan, it's the 22nd. Yesterday, for us, we started getting word on how the pre-order situation in Japan for the Nintendo Switch is going. And the answer is very well. A lot of online services and retailers were saying that they were out of their allotment of pre-orders within minutes. All of the big city Yodobashi locations and other electronics stores, they all had lines, you know, in the hundreds, with their allocations being taken up. Like, they weren't even able to fulfill everyone who was in line before stores opened. There were some stores, electronics stores in more rural areas, the rural juror, that, you know, they had units. They were tweeting out to their followers, like, hey, we still have Switch pre-orders. If you're stuck in the city and looking for one, you know, come on out. So it's way too early to conclusively say anything, but this bodes very well for the Nintendo Switch. You may recall the Wii U did not, like, most stores were taking pre-orders up until the day it was released. So for the Switch to have this kind of demand is very positive for the Switch's future with regard to Japanese software support, which for me is a big yay.
Yeah.
We also have word that Overwatch is hosting a special event, a special seasonal event around the Lunar New Year. This is the Overwatch Year of the Rooster celebration. The event will begin on Tuesday, January 24th, the same day I would expect this episode to go live, and it will be bringing a whole batch of new special themed character skins, emotes, and sprays, as well as more.
Excellent. The Ariana Grande event has begun in Final Fantasy Brave Exvius. This will last until February 2nd, and you'll be able to add Dangerous Ariana to your party. You have to go to the Dangerous Woman Tour event stage on Easy, and once you have acquired Dangerous Ariana, she'll permanently be available for your party.
So, the really cool thing here is that you don't have to roll gacha to get Dangerous Ariana. You just have to do an entry-level special event. If you don't currently play Brave Exvius, if you're scared of it because of the gacha component, the really cool thing about Dangerous Ariana is that she's actually, like, a viable character for endgame content. She does have, like, a 6-star form that she can evolve to and everything. So to give a character away who can take part in the endgame meta is actually a really big deal and very cool.
Oh, wow. I just have to say that. I'm so into that.
So I've actually come back to Brave Exvius. I was playing it before it launched in this region, as, you know, I talked about back then. Really enjoyed it, but I stopped playing it because I kind of burnt out. I was playing it every day for months. This brought me back, and it was really cool to see, you know, them add this character for free that you can easily get who can be, you know, sort of a leader of your party to take you to sort of the end game content until you get, you know, good luck with the gacha rolls. I think it's really cool that they did that, and really positive that, you know, the community, the fan community, has been a lot more, how does one say, accepting of this promotional character now that we've seen her stats and her stat growths.
I mean, I feel
there
like
there are still dissenters, unfortunately, but again, you know, having a pop star in a Final Fantasy game is actually not anything
and I feel
going
like
against
most,
type at all.
Most Final Fantasy fans didn't have a problem with it. It was just haters from the outside.
Right? Like, you know, maybe not to the degree of Zelda, but you can definitely make an argument that music has always played a part in Final Fantasy, down to, like, lutes in the literal, like, L-U-T-E,
yeah.
Lutes in the first Final Fantasy.
Well, I mean,
Final
opera.
Fantasy IV obviously has a you know, scene where you're saved by music being played by a bard. The opera in 6. In fact, I would say most Final Fantasy games have a scene based around music.
The whole Eyes on Me thing in 8.
Yes, most Final Fantasies have scenes based around music.
I feel like we have a little Game Boy micro topic here brewing.
Or maybe not. We also have word of more upcoming characters for Musou Stars coming out of Tecmo Koei, or Koei Tecmo. We have Legrina from Deception 4 Blood Ties. Rise, Oda Nobunaga from Nobunaga's Ambition, Lu Bu from Dynasty Warriors, and E. Naotora from Samurai Warriors. You know, these are all really exciting, but I'm most excited for Lagrina. I'm a big Deception fan, and anytime that series gets fan service, I'm super into it. Anything cool or exciting to you here, Slaggy?
I mean, it's always cool to see. It feels like Nobunaga has just really become, like, I mean, I guess in Japan always, but, you know, like, over here, where even people are like, oh, Nobunaga.
Indeed, indeed. We also have some release info here. F-Zero X has joined the Wii U Virtual Console. This is, of course, the Nintendo 64 installment of F-Zero. It is a fan favorite, and if you don't know why, this is a good opportunity to find out.
Not to be confused with F-Zero XXX, which is my fan fiction.
We also have word that Injustice 2 will be released by NetherRealm Studios via Warner Brothers Publishing on May 16th, 2017. Story of Seasons, Trio of Towns will be releasing in North America on February 28th, 2017. Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom 3 will be getting its physical release for PS4 and Xbox One on March 7th. Star Fox 64 has also joined the Nintendo Wii U Virtual Console. Dragon Ball Heroes Ultimate Mission X will be releasing on 3DS in Japan on April 27th. God Wars Future Past will be releasing in North America and Europe in March on the 28th and 31st, respectively. And last but not least, we have word here that Mina de YY Spelunker will be releasing on the Nintendo Switch on April 20th. And very excitingly, you know, this is a game that has been released as a free-to-play game on other platforms under the title Spelunker World. It will be releasing on Switch in a somewhat rejuvenated form with all of the microtransaction stuff sort of pulled out and released in the form of a more traditional game release. So, you know, I'm actually really excited about that. And while this is a Japanese release so far, I do hope we get word of a Western release.
Or, you know, you can just get it when you're in Japan.
Well, it'll be releasing in April. I will be back by then.
Well, you say that.
You think I'm just never going to come home? Anyway, why don't you get us started on the news?
News. 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 Oh my God. News.
Oh my God.
Yeah, so first off, we have news that Sweary 65 has launched a new game development company. This is called White Owls, and it actually launched on November 1st of 2016 in Osaka. Osaka. I don't know why I messed that up. There's an amazing promotional image of Sweary with a white owl. So there is a yet untitled original game project listed on their website. Also, a novels section. He has a upcoming mystery novel tentatively titled I Am Not a Cat.
Well, and he did tease on Twitter with a screenshot a second season of Dark Dreams Don't Die.
Oh.
So it looks like it's coming back, and yeah, I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just glad that he seems to be doing better health-wise, and you know, glad that he's gonna be making games again.
Indeed, me too. We also have word here that Square Enix has announced their first smartphone game geared towards girls.
And me!
This is called Kimikiri. The full title, of course, is Kimikiri Kimi Tokiri no Labyrinth, which is You and the Labyrinth of Mist, which is something I'm very excited about. We don't really know a whole lot more other than it's geared towards girls. It's going to feature 12 characters whom we've only seen silhouettes of so far, but chances are these are going to be 12 like super good-looking cuties
will go
into the labyrinth with you. We will definitely be talking about this more in the coming days. It is in development for iPhone and Android.
Atlus is bringing two games in the Utaware Rumono series to the West this year.
These are like typically like strategy visual novel games, sometimes with eroge themes. Overall, though, you know, the actual lore is pretty interesting. There is a fairly popular anime and manga adaptation as well, which actually, as far as I know, both did get English translations for North America. So, you know, pretty exciting stuff, and I'm really looking forward to this.
Excellent.
All right, well, with all that having been said, we also had a Nintendo Direct on January 18th.
Fire Emblem
Direct. This was a Fire Emblem Direct, and we learned about four games. The first was a rather huge surprise, this was Fire Emblem Echoes Shadows of Valentia?
I would say Valentia.
All right.
Valentia.
It is a remake of Fire Emblem Gaiden, which was the second game in the Fire Emblem series. It is an entirely new remake and has been referred to as a reimagining. It is going to be running on the same basic engine as Fire Emblem Fates, and it actually is also going to feature in-game animations hand-drawn by Studio Kara, whom you're probably most familiar with for their work on the new series of Evangelion films.
Yeah.
This is going to be releasing in North America on May 19th, 2017. It's going to also have two new amiibo released that day in a two-pack of Celica and Alm. What do you think of this? I assume you watched the direct. What did you think of Shadows of Valentia?
I mean, definitely unexpected, but I know it's going to be a nice little, I don't want to say placeholder, but I mean, you know, it is a remake, so it's not a brand new adventure, but I mean, you know, definitely.
Well, it's going to be new to me because I didn't play Fire Emblem Gaiden.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing. So, I mean, for Western audiences, I mean, it's definitely a treat to tide us over until, you know, the next brand new installment.
Excellent, excellent. We also got word that Fire Emblem Warriors will be getting a new 3DS exclusive 3DS port. Now, of course, this is no surprise. Hyrule Warriors / Zelda Musou, it released on 3DS. The new 3DS version is actually pretty good. If you run it on a regular 3DS, it runs abysmally.
So you mean it runs like a regular Musou game does?
Oh, you. Either way, the game's going to be releasing on Nintendo Switch and 3DS in fall. We got our first brief glimpse of what the gameplay is going to be looking like on the Nintendo Switch.
So good.
I think it looks quite good. It has almost like a pseudo cel-shaded appearance that I actually think looks stunning in motion.
I mean,
I'm really excited about this.
As if Chrome didn't already look stunning. I mean, now there's this beautiful lighting. But I'm going to be getting the Switch version. But, you know, that's good to have more options.
Yeah, absolutely. We also got the very brief announcement, literally nothing but confirmation that it's in the works, of a Nintendo Switch exclusive new Fire Emblem mainline game.
Yes!
This is currently in development and planned for a 2018 release. I'm really excited about this for two reasons. The first, of course, you know, we're now at the point where every other year we're getting new Fire Emblem games. Also, knowing that we're going to be getting a new Fire Emblem on Switch is super exciting.
Yeah.
And as Slaggy had pointed out to me, in 2020, we're going to see the anniversary of Fire Emblem, so you know they're going to do a 30th anniversary game. So that means we have a full new game to look forward to in 2018, and more likely than not, another one 2 years later. So,
and who knows, maybe 2019 we'll have another Valentia-style
remake of one of them. Hey, I'd be so down. Fire Emblem is one of those series where, you know, there are all of these games that were unreleased in North America. I would love to see those games get remade so I can finally experience them. I cannot get enough Fire Emblem. I'm super excited about this. You know what else I'm super excited about is Fire Emblem Heroes. This is the upcoming Fire Emblem smartphone game.
And I'm really happy that it's basically like Pokemon Ami, but with Ike.
So that's not what it is at all. It is
exactly.
Actually like a scaled down full Fire Emblem game. It does have a gacha system element, although Nintendo, in traditional Nintendo tradition, is sort of bringing some interesting takes to the gacha system. Like, you'll have a set of randomly generated gacha, and you'll be able to like pick which one you want based on like their basic type. So, you know, you'll be able to know if you're picking like a sword wielder or a spear wielder or an axe wielder, because the game is still based on the traditional weapons triangle of Fire Emblem. All of the fights will be taking place on little 8x6 maps that you'll be playing on your phone in portrait mode. But it does, by all means, look like it's still a full, proper Fire Emblem game.
Yeah,
just
that's awesome.
Scaled down for this experience. The gacha system will be added so that you can have all of your fave Fire Emblem characters in. But my understanding in reading about the game is that it is being designed specifically to be completed with just like core characters you get for free, so that you could play it with just the stock characters if it's not that important to you to have your faves like Ike and Marth et al. I'm super excited for this. I think it looks really good. What do you think, Slaggy?
I mean, I think that, you know, a lot of times games, when they make the transition to mobile, can be really sloppy, you know, with the touch controls and stuff. But a game like Fire Emblem is like, that's the perfect type of game to have have on a system like a smartphone.
Yeah. And you know, the funny thing to me, and a couple of my coworkers are already planning on playing this, is that this is going to be a really good like entry to the Fire Emblem series. I will play it. I love Fire Emblem, but you know, I will miss like the big, gigantic, expansive maps that you see in like Fire Emblem Fates, for example. So it won't replace it. It'll just be like a nice companion piece and a good gateway for neophytes to get into the series, yeah, which I think is a positive thing.
As I mean, the series is already like way more popular than we ever thought it would be here, but you know, exactly for, you know, bringing people in when they see, oh, a new Nintendo title on the store.
Well, right. And, you know, something else I really like is, you know, if we ever do a Fire Emblem buoy, we'll talk about this more. But, you know, back in the days of Awakening, and I know we've talked about this a little bit when talking about previous Fire Emblem games, probably Fates. I recall talking about this years past. Around the time of Awakening, the series was actually going to end, and Awakening was meant to be sort of like a swan song.
Yeah.
But it ended up selling more than 4 times the number that Nintendo had said they'd need to reach in order to do another iteration after that. It was a big hit for the game here in North America, ended up really making Fire Emblem viable here as a long-term permanent series. And now we've gone from, you know, about to die in obscurity to this is going to be the new income source due to whales playing, you know, the gacha system and trying to get all their faves. And I'm really excited about that. I love to see Fire Emblem grow.
Yeah, it's really becoming
its status grow, and now it's, you know, the second big game Nintendo's releasing on mobile.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of their big pillars now.
Yeah, absolutely. I am super stoked about it because I love this series. Anyway, that'll be releasing on mobile, both iOS and Android, on February 2nd.
That is really soon.
Right? By the time we record again, we'll have played this game more likely than not. Interestingly, during the Direct, it was actually confirmed to be releasing on Android on February 2nd with iOS as a coming soon. But Nintendo did tweet later that day that it will be a simultaneous release on iOS and Android.
Excellent.
Indeed. We also have some pieces of news here completely unrelated to the Nintendo Direct. That's all of the Direct. Well, let me step back. What did you think of the Direct, Slaggy?
I thought it had a lot of good stuff. I mean, you know, we have some things coming very soon. So, like a steady stream of Fire Emblem content over, you know, the next year. I mean, four Fire Emblem titles coming by, you know, we don't know when in 2018 the new Fire Emblem will be, but, you know, that said, 3 Fire Emblem titles this year, that's making up for lost time, I guess.
Indeed. All right, so we have 2 news pieces for our Culture Club. This is, of course, where we talk about stories that are ongoing in gaming popular culture. The first one is word that World of Warcraft legacy community Nostalrius is going to be closing down again. The reason why this time, though, is a little different. You may recall that it had its original closure back in earlier this year. We talked about that. They recently re-emerged in partnership with another legacy project. That one was Elysium, and they're closing it down due to the fact that it's actually becoming a little bit more of a pirate server. Rather than being something that people are playing for, you know, they want to be a part of like vanilla WoW content, which is the point of these servers in the first place, they're finding that a lot of people are joining just because they want to play WoW free, and they do not want to be known as facilitating that, and they don't want these projects to be known as pirate servers when they're meant to be legacy servers. Slaggy, what is your take on this story?
Yeah, I mean, the whole Nostalrius thing is dicey in terms of legality anyway. So, I mean, it's tough for me to really... I mean, for MMOs, I don't mess around with private servers and stuff. So, I mean, it's unfortunate that people who are really looking for this content will not have access to it. But on the other hand, like I said, as far as like emulation and piracy, despite the fact that we are a pirate podcast, you know, I
not
feel
that
like,
kind of piracy,
right? I feel like, you know, like we only tend to recommend emulation on Game Buoy when it's
your
like,
only option
when
to
your
play
only
a game.
Option. Same thing with like a fan sub for anime. If there's no other like legitimate way to watch it. So Yeah, I mean, that's kind of where I am at.
All right. Yeah, you know, I think it's a real shame. Unfortunately, you know, Nostalrius is closing down their program where they were, like, moving old characters from the old server over to the new server. And their goal really is to just end this whole, like, piracy talk before coming back and trying to really work toward a legacy server again. So I actually do salute them. I think that that's really noble. And I really hope at some point that they're able to work officially with Blizzard to get a legacy server up. I do think, you know, while I think it might only be 30 or 40,000 people who are even interested in something like that, that's still 30 or 40,000 people that should be served.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, Blizzard, of all companies, you know, they were really willing to work with the folks behind StarCraft Universe, the add-on that basically turns StarCraft 2 into an MMO. So, I mean, it's not like Blizzard is completely unreasonable, even with their status with Activision these days, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't see it never happening. It's just got to be on Blizzard's terms.
Yeah, absolutely. We also have word here, you know, a lot of the Last Guardian players who have finished the Last Guardian already are continuing to look for hidden content in the game. The big reason for this, of course, is that Ico, of course, had a pretty big secret, which was a hidden room that would actually give them a special weapon if they solved a puzzle. Shadow of the Colossus, of course, had the hidden garden on top of the central shrine that held the forbidden fruit that had an unexpected effect on your character. And both of these games have multiple secrets sort of like that. Interestingly, The Last Guardian so far does not have a whole lot of secrets like that. There are a couple of beautiful areas that are very hard to get to, but so far none of them have any kind of, you know, new secret weapon or unexpected gift. So people are still, you know, on the hunt. There's still the strong belief that there is something going on here that they are missing. I, of course, remain glued to my screen in hopes that they do find something and that it's a doozy.
Yeah.
All right. Well, all that having been said, we do unfortunately have a little bit of the doom and the gloom for you today.
Yeah.
The first piece of doom and gloom that we have for you today is word that Platinum Games' Scalebound has been canceled by Microsoft. This is, of course, super, super sad news to a lot of us. This was Hideki Kamiya's new game. It is based around gameplay concepts that he has been trying to design for years, often referring to this as his dream game, dream project. So happy he had the support of Microsoft. And Microsoft basically said, you know, that the game isn't where they wanted it to be at this point, and they had to make the choice to terminate development. Of course, we're getting some word here and there from people familiar with the situation, from people at Platinum, that basically Microsoft started to set unreasonable milestone goals, which, when Platinum was unable to meet, gave them an out for their development contract. Unfortunately, you know, it's easy to say, oh, you have to take all sides of the story, you can't just believe Platinum and Kamiya-san. It is worth noting that several Microsoft studios, or studios previously affiliated with Microsoft, have indicated that this is how Microsoft worked with them. Of course, the developers behind the Phantom Dust reboot, which now some other people are just doing a Phantom Dust remaster. The reboot, of course, was apparently being developed, and when things weren't going fast enough for Microsoft, apparently the same thing happened, which ultimately resulted in the closure of that studio. Of course, Lion's Head, is that the...
Yeah.
Yeah, we have heard similar things from those guys over the years. It really just seems like Microsoft has a reputation for weaseling out of contracts that way. So, obviously, we think this is super sad. We're really hoping this does not negatively impact Platinum Games in the long term. I can't think of anything worse than the idea of Platinum Games closing. But they had brought on staff specifically to work on Scalebound.
Now,
it's hard to think that unless they get a contract with a new publisher pretty quick, they could be in some hot water.
Now, is the Scalebound IP, like, does Platinum still have full ownership of that, or?
Well, Platinum, I don't think, owns any of the IPs of any of the games they've worked on, and as far as I know, Microsoft does retain ownership of the Scalebound IP as of the time that this news broke.
That sucks. Could Kamiya-san take the work that he, or the concepts, or would it be, like, could Microsoft potentially sue if they ended up putting out something that was based on the ideas that they were trying to do?
I think it would really depend on how they did that.
This just sucks. I mean, for me, the saddest thing was seeing how devastated Kamiya-san was. Like, you know, usually on Twitter, he's just, like, biting back at the trolls and, you know, talking about sexy babes, but he was, like, very...
Solemn
about it. And he said, I'm very, like, you know, very sorry that I've let you down. And I was, like, really sad, so...
Yeah, well, you know, this is a game that he's wanted to make for years, and he finally thought he was going to get to, only to be manipulated out of it, so to speak. So that's got to be an unpleasant situation.
I just really hope that, you know, Nintendo swoops in and, you know, gets Platinum to make Bayo 3, gives Kamiya a chance to, you know, if not do something like a spiritual successor to what Scalebound was going to be, then at least have, you know, some sort of space to flex his creative muscles.
And that is the one thing about this that nothing about this would really be good per se. But apparently Kamiya and team learned about this in late 2016. So my hope is that, you know, in the month it took for word to break, and, you know, obviously everyone behind the scenes knew about it already, Kamiya himself took a break from development, which is very uncharacteristic for him. It is my hope that one of their other partners, ideally Nintendo, but literally anyone, I don't care, I'll buy Platinum games on any platform, just give it to me. My hope is someone stepped in and said, hey, if y'all need a project, we could use some games, and worked something out. It's really my hope that Kamiya is already back to work on something else and that Platinum has new contracts coming in, because I don't think I'd be able to handle their closure.
I mean, for me, I would love if Nintendo just outright bought them and they basically became second party.
You know, I would support that because I'm happy with the trajectory that Monolith Soft has taken.
Right.
But I will say, I think Platinum Games is better doing work for all platforms and the occasional exclusive contracted title. For me, that is how I like to see Platinum operate. Obviously, I'd be happy for Nintendo to acquire them, but I don't need that. I just hope they continue to occasionally do Nintendo exclusives, do some PlayStation exclusives. I don't care. I'll go wherever they go.
But if it's between Nintendo buying them out or Platinum closing...
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, of course I would hope for a buyout in that case.
Yeah.
And I think Platinum Games would prefer that as well. So we also have word here that the Titanfall mobile card game, this was being called Titanfall Frontline, has been canceled. The closed beta is closing much earlier than previously announced, and the game is being canceled outright. This is, of course, something that I'm unhappy to hear about, because I like Titanfall, I like card games. It was, for me, a match made in heaven.
Yeah. And we have word that Devil's Third Online, which is the PC online version of Devil's Third, is ending their service on March 29th.
The game launched in Japan on June 8th of 2016, so it did not make it to the one-year mark.
That's sad.
Yeah, that is super sad. I'm super bummed about this. You know, a lot of people who played it actually liked it, so the online part, that is. So, you know, it's sad that this is getting shut down. It's always sad to me when games end service. So it's just, you know, it's a bit of a bummer. But either way, you know, those guys over at Valhalla are onto something else. So fingers crossed that, you know, they can get a new revenue stream up and continue to be healthy. So with all of this having been said, it is time for our discussion.
So why don't we switch over to that?
So let me get started here. And I want to start this discussion a little freestyle from our notes, Slaggy. I want to ask you, has your thoughts on the Nintendo Switch changed since we talked about them 2 weeks ago?
I mean, if anything, I'm more excited just because, you know, leading up to the big Switch event, I was, you know, nervous that I might not get a pre-order, which is very, you know, petty of me and very materialistic. But I mean, we're podcasting about video games. I can't really judge me too much, I guess. Now that I've, you know, seen, you know, more information come out and, you know, had a time to kind of digest it. Like I said, yeah, I'm just really excited. And, you know, each passing day is one day closer to Switch launch.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's actually pretty similar to how I feel.
And you know what's interesting?
Every day I'm more excited for the Switch, if anything. thing.
That the advantage that we have of them announcing the release date so late, so to speak, is that the wait is very short. I mean, you know, it's not like we have a year to wait or even like, you know, 6 months. It's like a, what, 8 week turnaround? Not even that, 6 week?
Yeah, something like that. I mean, I think we're just like 5 weeks off now or something. So I'm so excited for the way that they handled this announcement. I have to be honest. I was mad about it for such a long time that they were saying so little, but now we're here, it's almost out, and I'm super excited. I am increasingly excited for like Zelda Breath of the Wild. Every day I'm more excited for that game. I literally don't think I've ever been this excited for a Zelda game, which does mean I'll probably be disappointed by it, but aww. I think there's a possibility that I won't be, and that alone to me is just something I'm really
well, I mean, it has
about.
Potential to break the mold that, you know, we talked about in our Zelda retrospective, that, you know, the series needs a breath of fresh air.
Indeed. So let's see. I have a couple of talking points here I want to hit, though, because we have gotten some more information on the Nintendo Switch. We have word from Reggie Fils-Aimé pretty much confirming that they are aware that gamers want a GameCube virtual console. We have word from him that, you know, they're basically trying to sell the game to core gamers, or the game. They're trying to sell the console to core gamers. They're trying to sell the console to, you know, newcomers with sort of that blue ocean strategy. And so that's why they're looking at games for active gamers and casual gamers and non-gamers, which you can see even in the first 45 days with the release of stuff like Zelda, 1-2 Switch, and Mario Kart 8. As well as that, you know, they're trying to do games that will appeal to new gamers, stuff like ARMS, while also, you know, doing stuff for core gamers like Xenoblade Chronicles 2. So to me, it sort of feels like the idea of the Wii and the Wii U combined, which is also kind of what the Switch is.
Yeah, I mean, they really...
I'm really excited about this demographic focus. Slaggy, I'd like to hear what are your thoughts on both of these, but I'd like you to start with the demographic focus part of it.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, the Switch reveal event, the first little, like, video that they showed really positioned the Switch as the culmination of everything that Nintendo has done.
With the GameCube's handle.
Oh, poor GameCube. Well, GameCube's, like, killer core Nintendo titles, more like it. But, yeah, I mean, I really think that, you know, let's be real, they did make some mistakes with the Wii U. You know, certainly not in terms of what its mission was or the, you know, amazing library of games, albeit maybe quite smaller than, you know, we had hoped.
My thing with the Wii U, and, you know, I've been accused of being a Nintendo fanboy repeatedly this past week, which I'm actually perfectly okay with.
We both are.
My thing is, I am a Nintendo fanboy to the degree that I'm a fanboy of good games, and I think Nintendo delivers far more often than not, and to me, that trumps anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, any developer that is continually pushing the envelope, even in, you know, the 2010s creating new genres of game, you know, even in the 2000s creating new ways to play video games.
Yeah.
Anyone who's taking risks like that and trying to further games overall, for me, is always going to be forgiven, even when things don't pan out. Whereas someone like Microsoft, who is continually interested in only their bottom line, not interested in contributing to the game space with like new creative ideas or new interesting games that people enjoy, and really just chasing the money, it's hard for me to root for people like that.
Yeah.
Whereas the ones who do look at games as art, who do look at games as like something more than just a way to make profit, although certainly they are profit motivated because that's business, I do think that Nintendo tends to be involved for more than just what's the quickest way to a buck. And for me, that's why I stand mm-hmm. for them so hard.
I mean, that's been true from the start. I mean, when you go back to Miyamoto-san designing Super Mario Brothers 1 and trying to figure out how can this be, you know, fun and entertaining in a new way of, you know, bringing people joy. And now they're bringing people Joy-Con.
but I'm sorry, I interrupted
going back,
you with
no,
this tangent.
That's fine. Going back to the idea of the demographics, you know, I've said, you know, ever since we kind of saw how, you know, they were starting to market this and very clearly give the message that, you know, it's not the gamepad, this can be used on the go. You know, I think that their marketing approach has been spot on as to this point. You know, they brought it on a Tonight Show, right? That's the right Jimmy, right? I get Jimmy.
I believe so.
Was it Jimmy Kimmel or Jimmy Fallon?
It was one of them.
One of the Jimmys got the
Russell and Jimmys.
You know, so I mean, going on, you know, late night talk shows to promote it. That's not something that we would have usually expected from Nintendo. So I think they're, I don't mean this as any sort of slight against, you know, the late great Iwata-san, but I really think that, you know, with, you know, the new change in leadership, I really do think that a fresh leadership perspective has really maybe kind of allowed Nintendo to branch out in ways that they maybe had been more hesitant to. And, you know, we've seen that, you know, with the mobile market, you know, something that Nintendo said they would never do. And now, you know, kind of, you know, reaching out in different ways and, you know, trying to balance the, like you said, the idea of making something that's going to turn a profit with something that is innovative. You know, like the Wii U maybe was just a little bit too wild of an experiment.
But, you know, it led to the Switch, and I think it had a lot of incredible games. For me, the only games that aren't, especially like the internally Nintendo developed games on Wii U that aren't like must get 10 out of 10 are probably like Star Fox and Amiibo Crossing, Amiibo Festival. Animal Crossing.
And even then,
I enjoyed both of those games.
Amiibo Festival was really cute.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I get why people who are budget conscious wouldn't be into it as a $60 title. I get that. As someone who, you know, I try not to think about cost and stuff that much in my own playtime. I'm just looking for like, what is going to entertain me? What am I going to enjoy? Did I have a good time playing Animal Crossing Amiibo Festival with my friends? Yes, I did. As far as Star Fox goes, funny enough, I actually thought like the control scheme was perfect for the game. It was the second screen stuff that ruined it for me. So
yeah,
I would love to see a new Star Fox without the second screen stuff, but keep the motion control aiming. That part, being able to independently aim and move my ship, that actually did prove to be kind of revelatory for me within Star Fox. And it's very interesting to me. I hear so many people hating on Star Fox because of the motion controls, and I'm like, I just disagree with you. I think that it's total game changer to be able to fly in one direction and shoot in another.
Well, that kind of makes me think of another point, and I don't even know if I'm really responding to your original question at this point, but the fact that, like, you know, so the Switch is, you know, it is this idea of, oh, a home console you can bring on the go, but it really is also the culmination, like you said, kind of the Wii and the Wii U, and, like, you know, all of the ideas of entertainment and joy or whatever that they've had before, but really it is the Wii U and the Wii combined. I mean, I guess you could say that the Wii U still had a Wii in it, but I mean,
kind of literally,
but you know, the idea of the Joy-Con definitely being an evolution of motion control gaming, the you know, the Switch tablet, is that what they're calling it? I mean, the, I guess the Switch console is really, that is the console. I mean, because the dock really is not the console. You know, being a tablet, literally being a tablet instead of a tablet-like thing. I think what's really beneficial about the Switch is that, you know, there has not been a focus just on, oh, motion controls, oh, tablet. These things are part of what the Switch is, but, you know, their focus has just been on, I feel, more on showing the different type of gameplay experiences that you can have, and not just being like, oh, motion control, to the point where that is the, where it's a gimmick, you know? I think by having the different ways to play, I mean, that makes sense, that by having the touch controls, having the motion controls.
Versatility.
Yeah, the versatility, and the fact that their marketing isn't focused on, you know, just one thing, really, like, I mean, like, the idea of, like, the gimmick, I think, really hurt the Wii U. And I mean, even though the Wii was a, you know, huge success, I mean, a lot of that came from, you know, family, soccer moms, Mario, you know, who went, oh, we're gonna play tennis, you know. And so even though the sales wise it was it's a huge, making a note here, huge success, I mean, I think definitely the reputation of Nintendo, I mean, not that I care what other gamers think, but, you know, it was like, ooh, Waggle, you know, baby games, you know. So I guess that kind of wraps it up.
All right, and, you know, something interesting about the quote about the GameCube Virtual Console, because I'm not letting you off the hook here,
oh yeah,
is that Reggie specifically talked about how, you know, when he had joined the company, the GameCube was ending its life. People didn't like it. It was being bagged on by gamers. And, you know, it was not one of their higher install-based platforms. But now people remember it very fondly. Now people feel that, like, its software library was very strong, which, aside, I personally would agree with quite a bit. And, you know, that, you know, they see all of these people online asking for a virtual console.
Took it for granted when it was still alive.
So I think that sort of hindsight is interesting for them to be noting. But what do you think about the GameCube Virtual Console talk, that they're acknowledging that this demand is out there? Do you think that bodes well?
Oh, I mean, I've come to expect that, like, you know, when was it IGN that Reggie was talking to? And he's like, talk to me in a year and we'll see what's come of it.
Yeah, that was specifically about Mother 3 and a new Metroid. And, about how they hear fans, they know this is what fans want, and, you know, see me in a year, which a lot of us have read as, like, these won't be complaints a year from now.
And, I mean, I feel kind of similarly about Virtual Console. You know, there was a Kotaku article that was, like, they were basically, like, I think it was Brian Ashcraft who had, you know, reached out to Nintendo and said, you know, here's a list of everything we asked them, and then Nintendo's response was basically, for a lot of the things, we have nothing to announce at this time.
And the ones that they did respond to are actually points we're going to talk about here.
Right, but a lot of people, like, in the comments section of that article were like, oh, you know, Nintendo is got a console coming out and they won't say shit about it. It is, I mean, like, first of all, Nintendo is historically not talked about stuff until they're ready to. And, you know, the thing is,
I want,
like,
people to make up their minds. Like, everyone talks about how these other companies talk about, you know, Final Fantasy too soon. They talk about Kingdom Hearts too soon. Anytime a game is delayed, oh, well, they shouldn't have announced it so soon. Now, here we have Nintendo. Hey, we don't want to talk about these things until they're ready, until everything's locked and in place. We're confident they're going to be launching on launch day. And now that's a problem. It's, I mean, really, sometimes it feels like Nintendo is actually doing what people want and what they want of other companies. But because it's Nintendo, there's a problem.
And I mean, what would you rather have? Nintendo announcing features that come to not be, and then you're like, oh, well, they promised that and I bought my Switch because of that? Or just announcing what we do know about it and selling it based on the merits of what we do know. And then, hey, if there is something like Netflix coming, I don't know if I'm jumping ahead here, but, you know, then that's just a benefit. I mean, think about the PlayStation. Wasn't the PlayStation 2 supposed to, like, read your mind?
Yeah, it was supposed to have, like, brain controllers and be able to render Pixar-level graphics in real time. And, you know, Sony even showed video reels of, like, Toy Story with, like, a moving, like, a player-defined camera that was running on, like, high-end Silicon Graphics workstations or something. But they were pretending it was running on PS2 hardware. But, you know, that's not something that has stuck out in people's head. But by golly, Nintendo better tell us about the details of their console. To me, I'm just like, dude, as long as it's out and the information is out in time for people to cancel their pre-orders, if these things are make or break, then I guess I don't see what the problem is. Even though, as an impatient person, I get it. I want to know too.
And I mean, Rosalina forbid that, you know, they can't add features later.
Well, and let's talk a little bit. We're going to go a little out of order here from our notes, Slaggy, but let's talk a little bit here because we did get the word that Nintendo Switch won't have a Netflix app at launch.
Right.
At launch, the Switch is going to be a game-first console. It wants to be a dedicated gaming machine. It does not want to be a set-top box.
So it doesn't want to be an Xbox One.
Yeah, right? To me, I don't view this per se as a negative or a positive. Obviously, gaming focus is something I'm into, but I also don't think multimedia applications are bad. The thing is, for me, you know, while they are saying these things, you know, may be available later on, I guess the thing for me, because I've seen so many people complain about this, no joke, I've seen literally hundreds of people complain about this, literally hundreds, between Twitter, Gaff, posts on Kotaku, Silicon Era, etc., hundreds of people complaining. I guess the thing I don't get is, like, in what context would streaming Netflix on your Switch be preferable to streaming it on your smart TV or your iPad?
Okay, so here's my thing, and maybe it's a little presumptive, whatever that word is. Those are both words, right? They mean the same thing.
Yep.
Anyway, like, for me, it's hard to imagine the people who are going to be buying the Switch at launch who are really invested in this. Are you really meaning to tell me that you have no other device on which you are watching Netflix if you are a Netflix subscriber? I mean, I'm not trying to be, you know, too presumptive, like I said, but, you know, chances are, if you're someone who's buying a Nintendo Switch, that you've at least have, like, either a smart TV TV or even like, you know, a $70 Sony Blu-ray player or a Roku that doesn't work and you have to basically slam it to get it to work. My point being that, you know, are you really buying the Switch for Netflix?
Well, and
if
and
so,
that's
why?
And I'm not trying to come for people who feel this way. Obviously, more options is always better. That's something I strongly feel. It's just hard for me to see people saying that this is a make or break for them or that
that's
this
what
is
I'm, yeah.
shameful somehow. I guess I just don't see it. In fact, even one of the people that follows me on Twitter disagreed with me when I was tweeting about, you know, they don't think it's that big of a deal. And they were talking about how, you know, they don't understand, you know, for some kids, this might be their only console. And thus the expectation went their only way to view Netflix potentially.
Okay.
But the flip side to that is it's 2017. Literally, parents buy $50 Android tablets for their children now.
Right.
Or better. But like, I think about even the people with children in my own life, like they literally all have these little devices now. Even little like 3 or 4 year olds have these things.
2 year olds.
Yeah, well, exactly so. Like, again, ideally, Nintendo will have support for multimedia. I do think it would be preferable for it to support these functions. I don't understand how it's a make or break. I just,
and I mean,
it boggles my mind.
Do we want to see something like TV that never really came to be?
Well, you know, again, that comes to what I was saying earlier. I thought TV was a really novel concept. I thought Nintendo was trying to do something different with the concept of multimedia applications and being a set-top box. It didn't work out, but again, you know, they tried something different. They tried to move things forward rather than just resting on their laurels and doing, you know, the bog standard, and they got shot down for it. Now they're trying to put gaming first and getting shot down for it. I think Nintendo is damned if they do, damned if they don't.
Yeah. I mean, for me, like, Switch being, you know, portable, like, without having, like, a 4G connection, like, I mean, and it got, you know, you have, like, your iPads and stuff that you could view, or tablets that are not data-enabled that could do Netflix and stuff, but, I mean, I don't know. For me, like, it just doesn't seem like it's necessary. If it comes, it's great. Anyway, enough
well, it's
about
not,
Netflix.
It's not a, you know, always-online console. It when you take it on the road, it doesn't have cellular service, so...
Right.
And I assume that's why they're not including it, because, at least initially, because, you know, you're watching something on your Netflix, you take your console out of the dock, and you're watching it while you're, you know, using the bathroom. Okay, well, that would work. But you walk out of your apartment, you're out of your Wi-Fi range,
and, like,
and all of a sudden it cuts off. That would not be a good experience.
Seamless experience, which is what the Switch, this idea of switching, you know, to another gameplay style, or, you know, being able to switch into the go.
Yeah. Yeah. But as far as services that are being cut that I am a little salty about, we also got word that Nintendo Switch will not support Miiverse or StreetPass.
Yeah.
I view these both as negatives. Apparently, Miiverse is being cut because, you know, basically it's not, Miiverse moving forward is not a social media platform that will be growing. And with, you know, the share button and inbuilt integration to share screenshots on social media, Facebook, Twitter, etc., it's just, I guess, viewed as redundant and, you know, a walled garden where there are already open platforms that people are already on. So I kind of get that, but I still don't like it. I liked Miiverse. I liked the community of, like, oh, the people who see this screenshot are going to know what I'm talking about. I'm not just going to be spamming, you know, the other 1,200 of my followers who are not playing Smash Brothers.
Right. I mean, I get it too, and I am going to miss Miiverse, especially, like, the Smash stage of Miiverse, where it would, like, actually, so that'll be interesting how they're going to handle that. I guess they'll just have to cut that stage if they bring a Smash 4 port.
Or they'll use Miiverse quotes that are already on Miiverse.
And just pull from the Wii U and 3DS Miiverse or whatever?
Yeah, I don't know why that wouldn't be a viable option. The content is already there.
Until they shut Miiverse down, eventually.
Well, and they did indicate, though, that they will be supporting the Wii U Online platform stuff, Splatoon, Kart 8, Miiverse stuff, for years to come. They have dedicated to years to come that these are all still platforms that are full of life and people are using, and they have no intent to cut that life short.
So at least, you know, maybe another 10 years, so okay. For me, you know, I don't know if this is a little unrelated, but for me, the thing that was a little bit, I mean, I'll deal with it, but the thing that was a little weird is the voice chat and communication being through a smartphone app.
Yeah, you know, I don't do a whole lot of voice chat when I play games online. I did for Destiny. I made it a point because, you know, for the raid and stuff, like, you have to communicate in those. But more often than not, I prefer not to talk to people. Like, I'm actually not a terribly social person, despite what you might think listening to this show. So for me, it's not that big of a deal. For other people, it is, though. And I get it, because it's different from what the other platforms do. I understand why there's reticence. I just hope people will give it a chance and, you know, see if maybe it performs well. That having been said, I do actually, that's one where I understand the skepticism, because there's already a standard everyone's using that does work perfectly well. And at this point, I don't think any of us really understand why Nintendo's doing it differently, though, again, I assume it's related to the idea of, you know, undocking your system, not having a seamless experience if it's running these real-time online functionalities, but I don't really know
that point.
I don't really know the tech well enough to say that for sure. I don't.
Yeah.
I'm going to wait to see how the implementation works before I get too salty, but I do definitely get why on this one people are hesitant and skeptical. I totally get it on that one.
Yeah, but that's a good point that I wasn't thinking of about the, you know, seamless transitions, trying to make that as smooth as possible.
I will say, though, as far as the other part of the news story that we were not talking about, I'm really bummed about the lack of Street Pass. It's supposedly, as per David Young, Nintendo's assistant public relations manager, he told GamesBeat it's because they're viewing the Nintendo Switch as more of a console than a handheld. For me, who will be playing it more as a handheld than a console, I find that excuse bullshit, and I'm mad about it, because I like assembling my little puzzles and, you know, doing all my various mini games.
I almost wouldn't be surprised if Switch 2 ends up, basically incorporating that. I think it's a lot of it's maybe just that they don't want the 3DS to appear dead yet.
Yeah, and I think probably a lot of the things we're talking about here are probably dictated by, like, their visibility and the image they want to give off.
You know,
I'm still salty about it.
Is that, you know, they've talked about that Miis will still be present, but not a focus.
Yeah, and that makes sense. You know, Miis have been a focus for their last three hardware releases, the Wii, 3DS, and Wii U. It makes sense to move forward and try something new.
And so that, you know, the idea of not really having a Miiverse or, you know, Miis, I mean, because Street Pass is, like, totally about Miis, you know, and the Miis games and Find Miis.
Well, let's be clear. While the Miis are used as your avatars, there's nothing distinctly special about them that would require them for the functionality to continue.
Right. So, you know, kind of seeing the Miis take a backseat. Some people were kind of wondering if we would see Miis at all, but then, you know, we got word that actually from that Kotaku article is where I think they first really, that news kind of broke, is that the Miis will be in, like, the system settings, but kind of just more, I guess more like the Xbox avatar is where I've seen a lot of comparisons, just that it's kind of something you can use, but that you're, like, even your user image can be
deprioritized.
Yeah.
All right. Well, then the last system type thing that I want to talk about is one I'm incredibly excited about. And this is word that the Nintendo Switch will support up to 8 accounts, and what eShop your account accesses will be based on what country it's set for.
Yeah, so that'll make it easy for you to, you know, make a Japanese, or I mean, do you already have a Japanese Nintendo Network account?
Of course I do. I use it on my Japanese
DS. Right, right. So, I mean, even though we don't have official word that they are using Nintendo Network, I mean, I kind of would be
Nintendo accounts. They have indicated previously that they will be.
Because for some reason, there seemed to be confusion that, like, you wouldn't be using your Nintendo Network ID and such. I guess maybe that's about the ambiguity about whether, like, eShop purchases and, like, virtual console stuff would carry over, maybe.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of different questions that are being conflated in one that I don't think are necessarily accurate. You may recall back when the Nintendo account refresh happened in late 2015, they had specifically cited that bringing things forward to that at the time the NX was one of the goals there. So for
right.
me, it's really hard for me to reconcile, like, using a different account. Literally, I made this account to be my account that I will have when this console launches.
Right, right.
So I'm inclined to think that that will be the same login I'm using.
Yeah, so I mean for that, I mean, even if it was like even if you didn't already have a Japanese account, the fact that I could go and say, hey, I'm going to make a Japanese account, get this Nobunaga's Ambition game that maybe isn't coming to the West or whatever.
Taiko no Tetsujin.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I know that a lot of people do that with, you know, their PS4. I mean, I don't think anyone, I'm like, Japanese exclusive Xbox One games, are there any?
I have bought stuff off the Xbox Japanese store before. Specifically, like, Dark Souls 3 came out there like 3 weeks earlier
than
it came out here and stuff like that. So yeah, no, that is a thing on Xbox that people do. Except on Xbox, you can actually just change your current country.
Oh, wow. Well, Well, anyways, I mean, I think it's definitely a positive that, you know, instead of having to have, like, you know, a Japanese 3DS, because, I mean, you know, it's region free.
Yeah, absolutely. So if this works the way that it should work, and, you know, it's Nintendo, I get that some people are skeptical. It may not work the way that we think it should. But assuming that it does, then I'm very optimistic about the Nintendo Switch, man. If I can easily import stuff, play it all on the same console, I mean, that would
presumably
a huge step
all I'd
forward.
Have to do is make, like, another ID, like Slagcoon.
Slaggy JP.
And then that would be the one I would access. Now, would I only be able to access, I mean, I'm thinking, like, for the way it works on PS4, would I only be able to access the games on, if I'm logged into that account?
Well, on PS4, you can download it on your Japanese account and then play it on your North American account with zero issue.
That's nice. So it'll be interesting to see how that works for Switch.
Indeed. All right. Oh, and I do want to follow up. I know we talked briefly when Rob was with us and we were doing our post-announcement recording. He was talking about really getting stuck on that bullet point of Nintendo saying, you know, that the capability for region locking will be in, but, you know, games will not be region locked by necessity. I wanted to say, you know, I had recalled at the time that that was true for PS3 as well. Today, due to Did You Know Gaming, I actually recalled what I was thinking of. The Persona Arena games were region locked on PS3.
Yeah.
So that was sort of, when I saw that, I was like, oh yeah, that's what I was thinking of. And I just wanted to make a note here. Still 99.9% of PS3 games were region free. And that's kind of what I expect to happen with Nintendo Switch as well.
I mean, it's 2017. Region free just makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk now about some game follow-ups and maybe stuff that has popped up after that discussion. We have confirmation, of course, about Ultra Street Fighter 2, the new Challengers. While it does reuse the HD sprites from the HD Turbo Remix for PS3 and Xbox 360, the actual gameplay changes from that game have been thrown out. The gameplay in HD mode is still based on actual Street Fighter 2 Super Turbo, Super Street Fighter 2 Turbo, that is. The classic mode is obviously still just that. Watched some of the gameplay on the Nintendo Treehouse Live. It looks great. It looks already really far along in development, and it looks like a really solid Street Fighter 2 experience.
And it's a Switch exclusive.
And it is at this time a Switch exclusive. So I'm really excited about that. We also have word now that Monster Boy and the Cursed Kingdom, which is, of course, the spiritual successor to the Wonder Boy series, is going to be releasing on Nintendo Switch the same day as it releases on other platforms later in 2017. I think the date right now that's being said is sometime in May.
Oh, that's great.
So really, really exciting stuff there.
Yeah, I mean, you love your Monster Boy and Monster World and Wonder Boy.
Another game I just wanted to talk about a little bit is Snipperclips. This is a really interesting multiplayer puzzle game that requires, like, cooperation between multiple players, to fulfill various physics-based puzzles. I'm really excited about that. It's apparently going to be a digital release priced around the $20 mark. I'm super excited about this.
Yeah, from what I saw on the Treehouse, it looks super cute. And, you know, it was interesting because, like, this is easily viewable out there, so it's not really spoilers. But, you know, the first one had you, like, snipping each other. You're, like, snipping clip, right?
Uh-huh.
And you, like, had to, like, snip each other to, like, fit a certain shape. And I thought, oh, that's cute. But then, like, the second stage they showed was trying to get a basketball in a hoop. So, I mean, that really sold it for me, that it was not just all about trying to snip and clip into different shapes, which even that would have been a cute idea. But the fact that there's all these sorts of puzzles that you're really trying to figure it out, like, that sold it for me. I love things like cat physics and, you know, these silly, quirky physics-based games. So I'm totally there.
Indeed. Let's see. We also have word here that Super Bomberman R, which we had talked about last week as well, is being made by former Bomberman staff. The people who are working at Konami, who are from the Hudson acquisition that are still with Konami, are the ones who are made this game.
Hey, glad they're not janitors.
And something that's really interesting is that apparently Nintendo came to Konami, and Nintendo was the one who approached Konami asking them to make this game for the Switch. So, of course, I think that's super exciting, and I cannot wait for Super Bomberman R, which is now being confirmed as a release date game.
For the West as well?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. I can't wait. You know, I just think about how much fun we had with the TurboGrafx, the PC Engine version on Virtual Console playing that, and I can't wait.
And I also the max player count on this will be 8 rather than 16, unfortunately.
Hey, that's still good, though. It's still good. For me, it also is just the precedent of Nintendo approaching some companies like Konami and being like, hey, we'd really like to, have your game, your IP on our on our console. Capcom and Mega Man maybe next.
One can certainly hope.
Not that Mega Man is necessarily hurting quite in the way that, everything at Konami is, but...
I would beg to differ. But we also have word
that Legacy Collection was good.
We also have word here that The Binding of Isaac Afterbirth Plus will be releasing on Nintendo Switch this spring. It will be available both physically and digitally, and I think that's really cool.
And didn't they say they were going to be bringing some friends along so Isaac wouldn't be lonely?
You know, they did. The tweet you're referring to has been deleted, but we did get a tweet from Nicalis. It was also showing us the Switch user interface, but it had icons on the Switch user interface for 1001 Spikes and Cave Story.
Cave Story,
so,
yeah.
Really exciting stuff, and hopefully that comes to pass. I love Cave Story. I'd be totally down to buy
Cave
it
Story
and play
is
it again.
Great.
And 1001 Spikes is also fantastic.
Yeah.
We also have word that Mario Kart 8 Deluxe has at least 5 new characters, as well as multiple battle modes.
I'm so happy for battle mode coming back.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are. The confirmed new characters so far are Inkling Boy, Inkling Girl, King Boo, Dry Bones, and Bowser Jr.
Oh, you say Dry Bones?
I sure did.
You said Dry Bones? I love Dry Bones. I was actually surprised about all the hate when you told me about that.
Yeah, there was initially a lot of rumors going around by the various leakers that there were actually going to be 8 new characters. It's my personal hope that we'll get the 5 we've seen so far and 3 new ones at the end of each cup, which is sort of the traditional way of doing unlocks in Mario Kart.
Who's your money on if that's what we get?
I don't know, but I would love to see at least one of them be another crossover character, maybe bring like Ike or Marth over.
Maybe the Green Spritzy.
Oh yeah, I'm actually surprised that the Green Spritzy isn't in the game already, so yeah, that would make sense too. We also have word that Skylanders Imaginators will be a launch day release for the Nintendo Switch.
Awesome.
We do also have confirmation that there will be a Minecraft Switch edition in 2017. I'm very curious to see how that one's going to sell in Japan, given, Minecraft's crazy popular there and
everywhere.
Well, and everywhere. And the Switch looks to be popular too. We also have some update, or not just updates, but confirmation of what Has-Been Heroes is. It is a strategic action roguelike made by Finnish developer Frozen Byte, whom you're probably more familiar with for their work on the Trine series.
It looks really cute.
It does. We also have confirmation from Arc System Works that they're bringing Blaze Blue and New Frontier Days Founding Pioneers to Switch. You probably already know what Blaze Blue is, but New Frontier Days Founding Pioneers is currently a 3DS game. It's like a town sim type game.
Is it Frontierville, basically?
And it's more like an actual
game. Y'all remember Frontierville? You know you played it.
It's more like an actual game, but somewhat similarly themed.
Ooh, someone at Zynga is like getting a nosebleed or something.
And we also got word that the upcoming Shovel Knight Treasure Trove release, as well as the new Shovel Knight campaign, Spectre of Torment, will both be coming to Nintendo Switch before coming to other platforms.
Yeah.
So Treasure Trove Shovel Knight is the new sort of like Shovel Knight core game, and they're doing this so that if people just want to play the expansions, they can purchase them as standalone releases, rather than buying the full Shovel Knight package.
I mean, I'm gonna go for the whole package for sure. I'm eager to replay Shovel Knight, and because I haven't played any of the extra content yet, so.
It's super good.
And so I'm really excited. The fact that Switch is going to be portable and have like the best library. I mean, it's gonna probably be my primary system for buying things now.
Yeah, and I've had people ask me about, well, aren't you worried about getting like the least graphically impressive versions of games? And the short answer is no. Being able to play games on my commute is the biggest trump card of all, and I will happily take graphical downgrades for being able to make use of my free time. So I'm stoked for the Switch. I'm super stoked for Shovel Knight. I love Shovel Knight, and I will definitely be buying it again for the Switch. So that is kind of it for my news updates and game updates, and it kind of it for our conversation. So I would like to ask you, Slaggy, all this having been said, any changing your thoughts on Switch? Do you have any additional additional comments you want to make here?
I mean, I just, the thing that I've been seeing a lot since we've originally, you know, had the reveal, just, you know, that was just last week, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a little over a week ago, like a week and a half.
It just feels like it's been a long time. It feels like we've found out so much more, but a lot of people canceling their pre-orders, being like, oh, you know, really disappointed with the launch lineup. And I mean, and I understand people have different needs and, you know, different deal breakers and such, but for me, that's just not my personal experience. I'm still very excited. There was no doubt in my mind that I was going to get a Switch at launch. You know, even if it only did come with one game, or not come with one game, but even if there was only one game I wanted to get, I mean, maybe I'm kind of a blind Nintendo fanboy, but you know, I'm more sold on it now than I even was. So, especially with things like Snipper Clips looking like super cute, knowing that we have things like Bomberman on launch day. I mean, I can't wait until the inevitable SS Game Buoy Switch release party.
Yeah, and if you're listening to this and you're in my area, expect to be invited to a Bomberman party. So, all right, well, all that having been said, then let's move forward and start winding down by talking about what's up.
I said, hey, what's going on?
This week I've been playing a handful of games. Of course, I mentioned Brave Exvius earlier. I've also been coming back to Kingdom Hearts Unchained Key on mobile. They're currently doing a Kingdom Hearts 2.8 promo with a new card for HD Aqua.
Yeah.
That's also a character that is somewhat viable, that is a guaranteed unlock if you play in this period. So I think, you know, again, much like Brave Exvius,
nice.
I think it's really cool to throw these bones for new players and really give people who are lapsed players sort of a shot at getting back into the current end metagame. So really
good for you, Square
Enix. Big ups there. Big ups. I've also been revisiting the DS release of Theater Rhythm after playing the arcade release recently. It does hold up. It's still such a fantastic game. I need a new Theater Rhythm game. Don't let me down, Squeenix. I've also been revisiting Diablo 3 on consoles. That's been a lot of fun. And last but not least, I've been playing a PC Japanese JRPG release, One Way Heroic. It's a really interesting roguelike game where it sort of wraps up all of the conventions of a JRPG into like a one-life playthrough that's forever side-scrolling in one direction only, one round at a time. I think it's super good, super compelling, and really easy to play a complete game in just like 10 minutes.
Interesting.
And obviously how well you perform in true roguelike fashion will impact indirectly your future runs and unlocking new abilities and items and
that's
what
cool.
have you. Yeah, it's a really great game, and I highly recommend it. So, what about you, Saggy? What have you been playing?
I'm surprised you didn't mention something that I saw you totally... Oh,
I started a new play
point.
Of Super Mario RPG today, but I'd probably rather talk about that next episode after I've completed it.
Sorry about it.
It's all good.
Yeah, for me, a little bit of a lighter gaming week. Probably the most notable and fun thing is playing Diablo 3 with you. I'm basically anxious for... Not that I'm, you know, want to just like stop podcasting right now, but you know, I'm anxious for the podcasting to be done so that when Trainer Suckler gets here from Stabcast, we can play some Diablo 3.
Excellent. All right.
That's pretty much been it lately.
Sounds good. Well, then why don't you bring the social links?
Yeah. So
you just show up with like a Lynx cat. It's just like meow.
Atari Lynx.
Oh, nobody wants that.
Nobody. So anyway, our social links question of the week is, now that the dust has settled, we're taking an updated look at what's been revealed about and for the Switch. Have your impressions changed? So we got a few tweets. The first one coming from Clerical Errors, saying, mine has gotten better and better. Seems like they're making good hashtag choices, with a gif or gif of Tatiana from RuPaul's Drag Race saying, thank you. So, awesome. Very similar to kind of what we were saying. And also, that retro code saying, nope, I can't wait to own the system in the games. I missed that old school Bomberman, and Xenoblade 2 is a must for me. So awesome. Thank you to both of you for sharing your thoughts. I'm glad you're both as eager as we are. We also have a few little tweets to catch up on. We have Emiru69 saying, in the last episode of GameBuoy.org, or sorry, Sky in the last episode of GameBuoy.org was a pleasant surprise. That being Rob Roberts, of course. And and Rob saying, thanks, I was so happy to join.
We were so happy to have you.
And congratulations on your marriage. Oh my God.
Holy moly.
And your enzyme retweeting Chris Kohler, you know, our thoughts are definitely with him based on our news from last time. But confirmed by NOA, monthly free classic game on Switch is indeed only available for that month. More deets on Virtual Console before launch. So kind of as we had been unclear at the time. So thanks for the update, your enzyme. And thanks always for your support and your feedback. We love your feedback. We love your support, your subscriptions on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Google Play. We like your Facebook likes. We effing love Twitter. You usually say we effing love Twitter. And we're on GameBuoy.org, and you can mail us at mailbuoy@GameBuoy.org. GameBuoy.
And you can mail us over at mailbuoy@GameBuoy.org.
MailBuoy@GameBuoy.org.
All right. With all that having been said, I want to do my shout outs. You can listen to us over on the Voice of Geeks Network over at VogNetwork.com, where you can also hear such shows as Girls Gone Wow, where you can get a female's perspective on the world's most popular MMO, as well as Orange Lounge Radio, featuring our good friend Rob Roberts, where every gamer has a voice and from whom I have stolen literally every one of my podcasting cues. You can also hear me and Shane Alenko talk about the current season of the Power Rangers meta series, including Ninja Steel, which started today, and the Super Sentai meta series coming out of Japan on which it's based. Last but not least, for VOG Network, of course, you can hear the Starboard Power Coupling podcast, a Star Trek podcast you hope doesn't fail.
Oh, they're still doing that?
We also recommend you check out the Nintendo Love Fest, which does exactly what it says on the tin, and their sister show X Nation, an awesome podcast focusing on Marvel's Mighty Mutants.
Because someone has to.
Slaggy hosts a show. It's called Reading is Fundamental. It is about the current season of RuPaul's Drag Race while it's airing. Obviously, that is currently on hiatus, but it should be back in the coming months.
Yeah,
really excited about that.
Waiting for a reveal.
He records with me, as well as Rob Roberts from Orange Lounge Radio, and Delvin from VG Realness. We have a great time, and Slaggy, I would like you to take us to a place.
I'm going
to
take you to a game bar. Game Bar is the gay video game Prairie Home Companion and a part of the Haunty Bunch, along with the grand return of Video Game Realness,
yes.
Serving up a weekly dose of gaming chit-chat among friends, back after a hiatus, and I'm hoping back for good.
You know, who else has been teasing a return has been our good friends over at Koopa Club.
Oh, yeah. That's really exciting.
Koopa with the Q, Club with the K. They've been teasing it on Twitter. Supposedly, they're doing something this Sunday. Fingers crossed it's
a new show.
Oh, man.
Even if it's just a one-time thing, I'm glad to hear their voices back. Love those guys over there.
Same.
And I'd like to also shout out to Nintendo Fun Club, our allies, and the place for platformers, positivity, and pop punk, and cute kittens.
And cute kittens. Luna and Yuna.
And I'd also like to shout out to our other podcasts, which are the Same Type Attack Bonus Podcast, or Stabcast.org for short, which is your twice monthly look into the deeper worlds of Pokemon. That's our podcast with our good friend, or maybe more than friends for Captain Spike, Trainer Salker, and the grand return of Anime Buoy, your port of call for anime recommendations, news bits, and discussions that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. Really happy to have Anime Buoy back. Go check it out.
Super excited.
Our wonderful theme music is all reorchestrated, something about pouring a 40 in a fairy fountain.
Indeed. With all that having been said, it has been lovely to talk to all of you this lovely Saturday night. I hope that listening has been half as much fun as talking has been. We will be back at you shortly, but until then, keep gaming,
keep thinking,
and see you, Space Cowboy.
See you, Space Pirate.
The last Metroid is in captivity. The galaxy is at peace. Testing. Testing. I am Mike Testing. I am Mike Testing. Welcome to another episode of the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, your twice monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. Welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, your twice monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. Welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, your twice monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be.